This is Mayor Mike Coleman welcoming you to WCRS 102.1, 98.3 LPFM, Columbus's Community Radio.
Welcome to WCRS 102.1 and 98.3 Low Power FM, Columbus's community radio station. This is a service of Simply Living, and what you're about to hear is a special WCS feature providing clips and commentary on this past Tuesday's January 29th, 2012 Bicentennial Citizen Summit, hosted by Mayor Michael Coleman in the City of Columbus, providing a forum and a meeting place for the citizens of Columbus, its leaders, and others to voice their opinion of what they want the city to be like in the future and for the big plans in a few years for Columbus's Bicentennial 2012 200-year-old birthday. The following feature presentation here at WCRS features many clips and outtakes from the Citizen Summit, including Mayor Michael Coleman's speech, clips of the keynote speaker's speech on the power of crowds, the wisdom of crowds, and also cuts and outtakes of several of the questions and answers provided and gained at the Citizen Summit. And intermixed with that, even better, is commentary on what happened at the summit by two local citizens, Mr. Walker Evans of ColumbusUnderground.com and Mr. Kyle Izzell of Get Urban America. I'm Zach Hinkle. I'll be the host of the show and hope you all enjoy. We start the show with a little Columbus history lesson for y'all.
The city of Columbus. Our city was settled in 1812 by a man named Lucas Sullivan. He was on the west bank of the Scioto in Franklinton, our oldest community in the city of Columbus. On February 14, 1812, Valentine's Day, nearly 200 years ago, the state legislature chose to make the high banks of the Scioto River the capital of the state of Ohio. From these humble beginnings, our city's destiny remains one of the greatest, where every resident can prosper, where every neighborhood can be strong, where we can live safe and healthy lives, fueled with the hope that we can and will make our dreams a reality. It is from this destiny that we celebrate 2012, our city's bicentennial. Our city's 200th birthday will serve as a reminder that Columbus was born through humble beginnings, but made into the vibrant city it is today by the will of our people. To prepare for this historic occasion, Mayor Michael B. Coleman and the Columbus City Council have engaged the community and created the Bicentennial Commission of more than 250 citizens.
I'm bringing together the entire city, everybody in this city, and I'm asking every citizen of the city of Columbus, what do you want to be when we grow up?
The Bicentennial Commission is led by three proven leaders with strong community ties. Bishop Timothy Clark of the First Church of God.
It is expedient that we begin today planning for our bicentennial.
Dr. Gordon Gee, President of the Ohio State University.
By planning wisely and creating a good set of opportunities, that we will establish an inspiration which will then establish our aspirations.
Abigail Wexner, founder and chair of the Columbus Coalition Against Family Violence and KidsOhio.org. The commission is focusing on critical topic areas of citywide importance.
Is that what we begin today will ignite a flame of passion, excitement, and enthusiasm that will be contagious and spread throughout the city of Columbus.
To prepare for the bicentennial, The commission is undertaking the biggest public input process ever conducted in the city of Columbus to ask what you want to see for our city by 2012. Since June of 2007, over 10,000 comments have been gathered about our city's future through the use of an innovative public think tank, online and neighborhood surveys, youth and college forums, and other community meetings. From arts and culture,
the city really could get more involved in taking the appreciation of the arts districts and the theaters and all that.
To creating a more green community.
From stopping pollution, making sure that the city is clean, there's not trash everywhere, even as well on campus, that there's recycling bins.
Some places have carpooling lanes and whatnot. Those would be nice.
From sports and recreation.
Could you get a pro sports team down here, like a baseball team, or maybe even, I'd say, basketball, NBA.
Maybe a couple more bike paths.
To downtown revitalization.
We need the City Center Mall to be very, very productive.
I think if we had more festivals and even clubs or coffee shops downtown.
Making apartments in the downtown more affordable.
To health and human services.
Teaching people, you know, healthier way of eating.
To promote more walking and running and physical fitness.
To the issue of how we move people around our city.
A rail right here connecting Ohio State with Truman Village would be really great.
Upon completion of the public input phase, the commission will create the blueprint for the bicentennial, a guide to help this community accomplish its goals. What do you want Columbus to look like by 2012?
More involved, like, with the community and make it look nicer.
Eco-friendly environment. Healthcare costs. Make it more affordable for everybody.
More recreation centers.
Having the citywide tutoring for students that are struggling in high school.
Improve the lunches in school.
Getting better healthcare, like clinics to help people who can't afford healthcare.
Help improve Columbus' historical spots and make the city more focused on its heritage.
When they build streetcars, build magnetic levitation streetcars.
Improve, revitalize downtown, make it a little more lively in the evenings.
I'd like to see a green business association formed by city government.
I think it's okay for a community to have ambition. I think it's okay for a community to have a vision. So therefore, I'm asking you to dream it, so that we can do it by 2012.
So everybody out there, you're listening to WCRS 102.1 and 98.3 Low Power FM for Columbus. And this is a special feature here on WCRS. And we're going to discuss air clips from the 2012 Bicentennial Citizen Summit that took place this last Tuesday, January 29th, at the Convention Center, featuring the mayor's work, Mayor Michael Coleman, and speeches by Clark, Bishop Timothy Clark, Abigail Wexner, and Dr. E. Gordon Gee of The Ohio State University, along as well as a keynote speaker in a, I think, terrific, fun game show-like style polling that we'll get into and talk about that throughout the show. So I want to thank my guests for coming on today, Walker Evans and Kyle Esel. And Walker, can you tell our listeners about what you do all day?
Sure. I run the website ColumbusUnderground.com. It's an online site devoted to news and opinions and reviews of pretty much anything, any sort of topics you can think of here in Columbus, from art to urban renewal to music to restaurants to dining, so to shopping. Yeah, so I do that full-time. I also do a little bit of creative consulting work, web design, graphic design, branding, things like that. And in the past year or so, I've gotten a little bit more involved with trying to uphold my civic duties to the city. I've gotten involved with the Columbus Metropolitan Club. I'm on the Mayor's Young Professionals Commission. And I've also recently joined the North Market Board of Trustees. So just trying to get out there and do my part to help make Columbus a better place.
Very good. Sounds like you're pretty involved.
Yeah, way too busy.
And our other guest, Kyle, and he is an urbanist,
Yeah, I'm an urban planner. I have my own business called Get Urban America, and I consult with developers, municipalities, chambers of commerce, neighborhoods across the country to try to help make their cities and communities more urban friendly, because most people have no idea how to live in cities. And I in fact, teach people how to live in cities for a living. But also, I am an instructor of city and regional planning for The Ohio State University, and I love cities and everything to do with urban development. You name it, I know it. I'm all over it, and I kind of live for it. So I'm happy to be in Columbus because we're at a turning point here. Very exciting to see, and I'm glad to be part of it. Yes, sir. GetUrban.com, and shoot me if you want to email me. It's the same thing, KyleEzel@GetUrban.com.
And Walker, it's ColumbusUnderground.com, correct?
Yep, and the same thing, WalkerEvans@ColumbusUnderground.com if anyone wants to chat.
Okay, thank you very much. So we'll get into this a little bit further.
Good evening. My name is Linda LaCloche, and I'm the project manager for the 2012 Bicentennial Project. Mayor Michael B. Coleman is focused on clear priorities and getting results in his effort to build Columbus as America's 21st century city. In his 2007 State of the City Address, Mayor Coleman asked Columbus to begin envisioning our future, assessing our strengths and weaknesses, and aspiring to even greater progress for all people. He asked citizens to see Columbus as they would like it to be, to dream of this city as they wish it could be, and then to join him in rolling up our sleeves and in making it so. Ladies and gentlemen, it is this vision that launched the 2012 Bicentennial Project.
Well, Linda LaCloche is actually, she's from the mayor's office. She introduced, she was the first person to stand up and introduce the mayor and everyone. She's in charge of the process of the 2012 Bicentennial Plan. But the consultant is Jamie Green and ACP, which is American Communities Partnership. Mm-hmm. They're located in Grandview, Ohio, or Grandview Heights, Ohio, and New York City. So I'm sure they're thrilled to get the 2,000 people turnout that they did and put on that great show.
So it's sort of insourced. I was afraid that it might have been some outsider, but it's
no,
from the mayor's office.
Yeah,
mayor's
well, well Linda is the project coordinator for the whole process, but Jamie and ACP, who are local, are also they're taking care of the planning part and the extravaganza of the, you know, we'll talk about in a minute, but the touch keys and the process of getting extracting information from the community. So yeah, it's pretty local. It's a very local process, and local people are involved, which is cool.
Yeah, I just want to mention, because I forgot to earlier, as far as civic stuff goes, I was asked to be on part of the 2012 commission. I'm on the committee for marketing and branding, trying to come up with a way to market the city, if that's possible. It's a very hard commission or hard committee to be on, I think. But it's really inclusive. The meetings that I've been to so far, they seem to have a pretty broad range of talent that they're kind of bringing in from all different sectors of the city. And I've heard the same thing for the other committees. You know, it seems like it's a really inclusive process, and it's really local as well.
Thank you, Linda, so much. And wow, look at you. All of us here together, cozy today. I want to thank the outstanding 2012 Bicentennial Commission, its chairs, Dr. Gordon Gee, Abigail Wexner, and Bishop Timothy Clark. I want to also thank the focus group chairs and thank everybody for coming here today to spend a couple of hours talking about the rest of your life. This is important, and that's why we're here today. Today represents the largest single public input process ever attempted in the history of the city of Columbus. And I want to thank you for being here this evening. I want to thank all those elected officials that work hard day in and day out
to help make our city great as well. We have some here today. John O'Grady, Clerk of Courts. Commissioner Marilyn Brown, President of the Commission, Marilyn Brown. Judge Eric Brown of the Common Pleas Court. Judge Timothy Horton of the Common Pleas Court. The greatest auditor in all of America, Hugh Dorian, is here. County Commissioner Paula Brooks, Herschel Craig from the Columbus City Council, Priscilla Tyson from the Columbus City Council, and Kevin Boyce from the Columbus City Council. Thank you all for being here and participating. In just 4 years, our city will be 200 years old. And I want that year, 2012, to be this city's first year of our renaissance, the beginning of our golden age in the city of Columbus. I always say, we've come a long way, baby. Over 200 years. But we have a long way yet to go. From our humble beginnings in Franklinton, where Lucas Sullivan founded our city, and where Mrs. Sullivan adopted a little black boy and brought him into the family on the west banks of the Scioto, at a time when it may have even been illegal to adopt a little black boy at that time. That's how we got started in our community, coming together, a diverse community from the very outset, at the very beginning. And that's a good thing. To today, where we are now the 15th largest city in America, the largest city in the state of Ohio, ranked year in and year out as one of the best places in the city to live, work, and raise a family. But I say, as far as we've come, our best days are still ahead. You know, I become sometimes a little irritated. You may have heard that before. But in this case, irritated when we call ourselves a cow town. You've heard it. I've heard it, and it irritates me, because Columbus is a great city, and we should be proud of our heritage, be proud of our history and our roots, because we do not know where we're going until we first understand from where we come from. I say it is okay to have a community ambition for our city, and for our residents to have a little swagger about what we have accomplished so far in the city. I think ambition without arrogance is a good thing. A swagger without conceit is a good thing. Pride without vanity is where we need to be in the city of Columbus. So this 2012 visioning process is our opportunity to set community priorities for our city and establish a path to accomplish them, working together as a community. This process of setting priorities does not mean that everyone's wish will be granted, because that is not reality. This is not Christmas. I am not Santa, and we are not kids with a wish list. This is a transformation that can only happen when the community comes together to set priorities and make goals to accomplish these things. We are here tonight to talk about what we value as a community and how we can make these things happen. This is not just about what the city will do for you. This is what we will do for ourselves in this city. In fact, the role of city government is only one vehicle to achieve these goals, and we need many more vehicles to carry out our community agenda. And it starts with each of you. More than 1,700 of you. In fact, last count, it was 2,000 of you right here tonight
And I was just hoping for a small little town meeting of a few hundred people. And thousands show up, and that's a good thing. It says a lot about our city, a lot about you, a lot about how you care about where we're going in the city of Columbus. We're collaborating, and our city works best when we collaborate and when we share our values. And helping to build a community vision without blinders to the realities that we live in and the sacrifices, frankly, we may have to make in the process. You know, my wife Frankie and I, we love to go to the movies. We sneak out sometimes on Sunday afternoon when football isn't on. And we saw a great movie the other day called The Great Debaters. And in this movie, Denzel Washington said to his debate team of the little College of Wiley College in Texas, as they were working hard in preparation for the debate of their life, he said to his debate team, "We have to do what we have to do before we can do what we want to do." And this community process tonight is what we have to do before we can do what we want to do. 2012 transformation. I'm excited about tonight's speaker. I've had an opportunity to speak to him, to welcome James Surowiecki in Columbus. He knows the importance of a collaborative process, setting community priorities, and his work has been featured in major publications all over the country, including New York Times Magazine and the Wall Street Journal. And his book, The Wisdom of Crowds, is not on sale tonight, but it's a great book. And it's how we organize our thoughts in a superior way to drive a mission in a community. We're making history in the city of Columbus. We're making history today as we come together in this collaborative effort. Because together I know that we're going to set ourselves on a path for the generations, beginning with the first year of our renaissance, 2012. Now I'd like to bring back our manager, project manager for 2012, Linda LaCloche. Linda?
Well, Linda LaCloche is actually, she's from the mayor's office. She introduced, she was the first person to stand up and introduce the mayor and everyone. She's in charge of the process of the 2012 Bicentennial Plan. But the consultant is Jamie Green and ACP, which is American Communities Partnership. Mm-hmm. They're located in Grandview Heights, Ohio, and New York City. So I'm sure they're thrilled to get the 2,000 people turnout that they did and put on that great show.
So it's sort of insourced. I was afraid that it might have been some outsider, but it's
no,
in the mayor's office.
Yeah,
well,
Linda is the project coordinator for the whole process, but Jamie and ACP, who are local, are also they're taking care of the planning part and that extravaganza of the, you know, we'll talk about in a minute, but the touch keys and the process of getting extracting information from the community. So yeah, it's pretty local. It's a very local process, and local people are involved, which is cool.
Yeah, I just want to mention, because I forgot to earlier, as far as civic stuff goes, I was asked to be on part of the 2012 Commission. I'm on the Committee for Marketing and Branding, trying to come up with a way to market the city, if that's possible. It's a very hard commission, or hard committee to be on, I think. But it's really inclusive. The meetings that I've been to so far, they seem to have a pretty broad range of talent that they're kind of bringing in from all different sectors of the city. And I've heard the same thing for the other committees. You know, it seems like it's a really inclusive process, and it's really local as well.
Let's talk about that process of the polling. Well, first of all, it started many, many months ago, and with the Think Outside the Box kiosks around town. I did come across one over the summer at a festival and entered some comments. Did you guys see those anywhere?
Yeah, I spotted the one at the Arts Festival. I saw it a couple other times, but I think when I actually sat down and played around with it was at the Arts Fest.
Yeah. And you, Kyle?
Yeah, I started at the Arts Fest, too, and actually sat down to try to give my comments, and it broke down, so I didn't. But I'm sure they fixed it after I left. So.
Yeah, how would you describe that? I don't know. I'm not really a tech guy, even though I'm behind this radio thing. It's sort of like a little booth with a computer monitor and a keyboard. What would you call that?
Yeah, I mean, essentially that's what it was, just a little partition. I think it had touchscreen capabilities and a built-in video camera where you could record a little blog confessional, like a video blog type thing, which I think was cool. It sounds like they got a lot of response out of it. I think they said they got around 12,000 pieces of comments from it. So, I mean, seems to be pretty well received, I thought.
Yeah, and then they took those comments and sort of, I think, categorized them and narrowed them down into kind of blanket phrases, themes that would be pulled on throughout the event. And this sort of like had a transition from like what Columbus is seen as now, what do you want in the future, and the ways to go about doing this. And that was taken in three parts throughout the process. The remote wireless polling, are you familiar with that being done elsewhere? Of course, the speaker said it was, but have you heard of results from other cities and places?
You're talking about the keypad, yes. The touchpad thing? I was actually at an event at the convention center about a week and a half ago that Tech Columbus put on, and they played around with the touch features there a little bit as well, did some polling of the audience and things like that. And I don't know if they were just breaking the system in and trying it out. It didn't have an extremely useful purpose there, but... I could see it being used in other areas. I mean, I don't know of any off the top of my head, but that's my only experience with it so far.
Yeah, yeah. And Kyle, with your urban experience, have you seen that in other cities?
It's a pretty purposes? Innovative way to go about it, because most of the time communities use the traditional red and green and blue dots that you peel off and stick on a flip chart full of goals and objectives and vote on it that way. So, yeah, it's been done, and I think that ACP has used that technology in other cities too, but it's really neat to see it utilized with 2,000 people at once, an instant replay of what of the huge room wanted to see and vote. So I think it was great.
Yeah, it was fun too. It was like a little video game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually would aim it at the screen, and then I always get a laugh from all the people around my table, and I kept doing it purposely just to get them get some humor in there.
So I'm going to start by telling you a story, and it's the story of a British scientist named Francis Galton. About a century ago, Francis Galton found himself at a country fair in the west of England. And it was a fair much like the ones we have here in the U.S. People would come and, you know, they'd bring their livestock and their produce and show it off. And as Galton was walking through the fair that day, he came across a contest. And the contest was that an ox had been placed on display. And people were lined up to guess the weight of the ox. So the way it would work is you would pay 6 pence and write down your name and address. And the best guesses would win prizes. So there was some incentive to guess right. Now, as Galton described it, it was a very big crowd that actually lined up to take a guess that day. It was around 800 people. And it was also, and this is important, it was also a diverse crowd. So some of the people in the crowd were butchers and farmers. And, you know, you could consider them in some sense kind of experts in trying to guess the weight of an ox, because that was probably pretty important to their business. But a lot of the people in the crowd were not experts at all. They included merchants, family members, clerks. You know, they were people who, at least on the surface, seemed to have no kind of insider knowledge of cattle. And now, after the contest was over, Galton took all of the guesses that these people had made, and he did a series of statistical tests on them. So he graphed them from high to low to see if they formed a bell curve. He calculated the standard deviation of the guesses. And then he did something very simple, which was that he just took the average of the group's guesses. Now, one thing I didn't tell you about Galton is that he was a notorious elitist. He really thought that only a very few people in the world had the capabilities that were necessary to make good decisions, to lead. And so he really thought you should only listen to the people at the very, very top of the spectrum. So Galton thought that the group's average guess, which I would say represented the kind of collective wisdom of that group, he thought that that guess was going to be way off the mark. Because in his mind, what you were doing was you were taking the guesses of a few very smart people, a few mediocre people, and then a lot of morons, because he basically thought everyone was dumb. So he thought that collectively what you were going to end up with was a really flawed estimate. But as it happens, Galton was wrong. Because the crowd had guessed that the ox would weigh 1,197 pounds. And when all was said and done, the ox weighed 1,198 pounds. So that, in other words, the crowd's judgment was essentially perfect. And what I'm going to try to convince you of today is that this was not a coincidence, nor was it a phenomenon that is confined to livestock weight guessing, but that it actually was an example of a very powerful, and I would argue potentially tremendously useful phenomenon that I call the wisdom of crowds. The idea of it is very simple. It's that under the right conditions, groups of people can be remarkably intelligent, and they can actually often even be smarter than the smartest person in them. And what that means is that if you can figure out ways to tap into the knowledge of a group, if you can figure out ways to tap into the knowledge of a community, you can actually dramatically improve your ability to solve problems, to think about the future, and to really identify the challenges that you're going to face going forward.
You're talking about groups of people making decisions, and one of the big emphasis was the power of crowds, and the keynote speaker, I believe his name was Jamie Sawicki. What did you think of his comments in his speech? Did you like it? Do you think it was persuasive in using that system that was used at the summit?
Yeah, I think so. I've never heard him speak before, and I actually haven't read his book, but I'm thinking about going to pick it up just because it's a really interesting concept. But I think the same sort of theme has been applied throughout this entire process, you know, of polling the public and getting public input. And I think it's probably a really valuable trend that you're going to see a lot of other cities doing. And I was really glad to hear that Columbus, the turnout at the event was one of the largest in the country. It's one of the largest types of events of its kind. So it's nice to see, you know, our city kind of taking those steps and being inventive and creative and a little bit on the forefront of doing these types of things.
Well, I think that it was pretty ingenious of the committee, of the mayor's people who put this process together to bring the guy in to talk about his topic. Obviously, he mentioned it over and over about the wisdom of crowds, and that's apparently his book title. But it drove the point home for about 30 minutes that we all are in this together, and our decisions together will be the best decisions for the community. And I thought that was a pretty good way to go about it, bringing somebody else who's an expert on crowds and decision making into the process, so we'd all feel confident about how it works. So that was pretty neat.
Yeah. I'd say almost in being this is sort of a government led thing for a huge project. I thought it was sort of a radical approach that it wasn't so top down anymore. The experts, the politicians, the academics were sort of just not, you know, always put in that position as usual, and it just kind of gave it over to the populace, the denizens of the city. Pretty exciting, eh?
Well, as a city planning professional, I know that if you don't do that, it won't work. Top-down approaches are very rarely successful, and they're pretty smart. The city knows that, and the mayor's people know that if you don't get as many people to express their opinion about what they want to see and how they want the city to evolve, then it won't work. And that's what they're doing very successfully here. And I think that as the momentum continues, then more people will be apt to vote for the bond issue this fall and make all these things happen. So brilliant. And I think that they're doing a great job.
Good.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the city could come up with a lot of the same types of initiatives, and they probably would, ways to improve transit, ways to improve recycling, things like that. But the fact that this is all being born out of the public and what the public wants, it gives the ownership over to the public. You know, if we build a streetcar, it's not going to be Mayor Coleman's streetcar. It's going to be the people's streetcar because they're the ones asking for it, and they're the ones, you know, coming up with the ideas.
Yeah. He's blameless then.
Yeah.
Kyle, you're planning. Do you know much about the history of urban planning in the United States? Yeah, you're saying that the top-down old planner style doesn't work. When did that sort of mentality shift from, you know, what time period, and a little history of that? Maybe?
I do. This is my own take on it, though. Back in when there were the cities were much smaller, cities, mayors and leaders brought in the famous architects like Daniel Burnham to come in and remake Chicago and do the waterfront development on a large scale. But now that the cities are built out and people have been living here for a couple hundred years, we have the bottom up approach seems to be the one that people have to do, because just think of it. If the mayor or the city council said, we're not building a streetcar, we're going to provide a souped up bus and paint the bus, and that you're gonna have to live with that. Well, people won't be happy with that. This is a democracy, and planning these days, city planning in general, and this country and the system we live in, if the people aren't behind it, then it's not theirs, like Walker said, and the mayor will not, the leaders will not be successful. So I think that it's just a no-brainer that you have to do that. And I think that Columbus is really taking advantage of this strong momentum of people who love this place and want to see it get better. And they know that. So they know that there's a lot of support in the community for it.
The power of crowds. Do you think we should have more ox weight guessing games around town? Like just in every neighborhood?
Definitely. Yeah. Since the guy mentioned that there's a professional jelly bean counter at the University of Michigan, I guess that Ohio State should probably come up with some sort of rivalry to counter that.
Yeah, ox and jelly bean sounds delicious.
I've asked three proven leaders and friends, my friends and friends of the city and of Central Ohio, to step forward once again as they have on many occasions. Dr. Gordon Gee. And then there's Abigail Wexner. And then there is Bishop Timothy Clark. Also a visionary leader.
So there were these three I forget their actual titles, but it was Dr. E. Gordon Gee, Bishop Timothy Clark, and Abigail Wexner. They're these the mayor's three, right-hand men to help implement this plan. But I didn't really understand their purpose. Did you guys get a better purpose of what those three individuals were supposed to do?
I think they each head up one of the committees. I think there's 12 or 13 subcommittees. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned, I'm on the one for the marketing and branding of the city. But there's all sorts of different initiatives, and I think the three of them are probably on the some of the more important ones. I can't remember off the top of my head which ones they're on. But.
And I think that they're the executive board of the whole process.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think. Yeah. They head up committees too, but they're the top rung of the mayor's appointees. And they're heading the process for him, the way I took it anyway.
Yeah, yeah, I had a hard time really understanding their purpose, other than to be like hosts for the questions. But what do you think about these three individuals in their charge, in their position, and their duty here, if anything?
I mean, I think they were brought on board just to kind of represent, a diverse group out of the city's leaders. So, I mean, it's good that, OSU is being included and big business is being included and, religion is being included. So, that trend continues across the other committees and commissions and things like that. So, I think they were, a pretty good representation of what our city has to offer as far as leadership goes.
Yeah, great.
This is Gordon Gee, and I am speaking on WCRS 102.1, 98.3 on your FM, Columbus's community radio station.
Which phrase below best describes Columbus's personality? Number one, no matter where you are, strangers actually say hello. Number two, everyone minds their own business, and that's okay. Number three, everyone's busy and on the go because people here get things done. Number four, it's a very laid-back place, not much stress or anxiety. Number five, it has so many open minds that are ready to embrace new ideas. Six, it's comfortable in a classic Midwestern values kind of way. And number seven is it's hip, modern, exciting, a place where things happen. So which phrase, can we go back just 1 minute? Which phrase below best describes Columbus's personality? We've got seven choices. 44% of you tuned in here to number six. What best describes us is classic Midwestern values. Great. All right, followed right in there behind this, I think goes right on with the Midwestern values, is strangers saying hello to each other.
And go into what our guests Walker Evans and Kyle Wiesel think about their personal thoughts. And before we get into the streetcar issue, which I think is the biggest hot button, there was a constant sort of calling out for what would attract somebody to live in Columbus, what would attract a business to set up shop here, and sort of like the image, sort of mentality that Columbus has or you want. What's your own personal thoughts on that, Walker?
I mean, ultimately, it's going to depend on what the individual wants, what their values are, whether it's for better, you know, recycling programs, or, you know, they want to live somewhere fun and vibrant, or they want to live somewhere affordable. I think Columbus already has a couple of those notches in their belt, and some of the initiatives that the 2012 Commission is addressing will be some of those others that kind of fill in the blanks where we don't perform as well, such as transportation. And I think one of the reasons that's been such a big hot-button issue and big important topic is that because it's going to be a catalyst for other types of development. Other than where you live, one of the most important things is how you get around. So, mm-hmm. You know, with the improved transportation is going to provide Columbus citizens with a better quality of life, easier ways to get around, more things to do, more things within reach. So,
do you think that'll somehow relabel the city, change the image both within and from beyond, from outside views?
I would say so, because typically, I mean, from my personal experience and from some of the people that I talk to, a city doesn't feel like a big city if it doesn't have certain key elements, and I think good public transit, typically rail transit, is one of them. And I think that's going to change, you know. I don't know if necessarily it's going to be a way to brand Columbus, because there's so many other cities with similar initiatives, but it's something that's going to feel different. And I think it's going to feel a lot different, not only to people that live here, but people that visit as well.
Clean pair of pants.
Yes, yes.
I want to add to that. I think Walker's right that we have to have all the ingredients a big city needs to be, you know, thought of as a great place to live by both people who live here and also people who are considering it. But also, I was in Asheville, North Carolina last week for a funeral. And after the funeral, strangers said, well, where do you live? And I said, Columbus, Ohio. And I can't tell you how disappointed I am by the reaction, just hearing that. And it was, ugh, out loud. And I said, well, why would you say that? Columbus is a great city. Why would you say that? And it just sounds so, you know, and that they live in the mountains of North Carolina, and they have this, you know, automatic reaction to Columbus.
You could be an old north-south thing?
No.
Okay.
I travel the country a lot, and I get it's the same. So there, and people here know that. I mean, the leaders know that, and they're working on it. And, you know, there has been a lot of talk about branding and so forth, but I think finally the city is in a position to do something about it and understand that there is a problem, and not just say, well, big deal, people don't like us, we, you know, screw them, we will we'll make it fine. But that's something that I think that with these capital improvement projects that come up, I think that will help us. I want to mention one more thing about this, if possible. Yeah. On my table, I had a packed table. I think there were maybe 9 or 10 people at the summit, and they all said the same thing, that we wish that we could be the city of the future. We want to be the city that sets the pace for the rest of the country. That was their vision for Columbus, and I think that we are on the cusp of doing that.
Hopefully not like Las Vegas City of the future.
No.
I think one thing people forget about the streetcars, there seems this idea that if there is a streetcar built, it'll just be like that only line, but it's not. Like 2 years later, they'll add onto it and go this way, that way. If you look at the old maps from 1900, 1911, the streetcar system, you know, you could walk in 4 or 5 blocks at the most in the inner city grid of Columbus and you hit a streetcar line, and that is awesome. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the only negative comments I hear about the streetcar comes from people who think that it's supposed to be this, you know, end-all system and this final solution, and it's not. It's part of a greater transit network, not only additional streetcar lines or potential light rail lines in the future, but it's going to tie into CODA lines, probably increase bus ridership, bike paths, bus stations, the Greyhound station. They could run something out to the airport and tie that into things. So I don't think it's just this one little thing. I think it's going to be the small ball that gets things rolling and turns into this great big transit development system like in the future.
Which of these approaches would best contribute to making Columbus the best downtown in America? Connecting downtown to neighborhoods through a variety of choices, bicycle, pedestrian, transit improvements, creating and enhancing the downtown and riverfront park system, 3, reinvigorating the retail environment, 4, increasing the variety of uses to promote a 24-hour activity, 5, improving the range of affordable housing options, and 6, all of the above. I think that agenda is clear, Mayor Coleman. We got to do it all downtown. Which of these approaches would best contribute to protecting our natural environment? 1, making citywide recycling readily available, easy to use, and widely affordable. 2, creating additional green spaces. 3, improving options to reduce car travel and air pollution. 4, increasing protection of waterways and water quality. 5, promoting green technologies and clean energy. Those are your 5 choices of approaches, themes of approaches that would best contribute to protecting our natural environment. The most significant approach that you've identified at 44% is reducing car travel and air pollution. Pretty solid.
Get deeper in here. So there's, for our listeners who weren't there, there's then a series of questions on the board that you can hear throughout this show and clips. So some of the major results I thought was there seemed to be a big interest on changing transportation, improving walkability, bikeability, and that was in several things. One was for a natural environment, which I think walkability improves more than the natural environment, improves the human, the built environment for sure. What was some of the general trends that you, if you had to have a few phrases or words that you got from the poll results from the people voting at the summit?
Well, most definitely, like you said, it was transportation. It seemed like that popped up everywhere. And Columbus is not known for having a good transportation system other than for your car. And it was very interesting to see that the major issues seemed like several questions. The major issues were that we don't have a train. We don't have good transportation. We don't have we need more bike paths. We need more stuff, more transportation options than just, cranking up your car and wasting a lot of gas. So that was cool. And I think the mayor, I was right behind him. I was in a table right behind him, and he was nodding and you know, very happy that apparently he was very happy that those questions were being answered in that way, I think, because he knows that, and a lot of people around here know, and obviously they voted for it, that we have a woefully pitiful transportation system for a city of our size. Mm-hmm. So that was really exciting, I thought.
Yeah, and we have a great legacy that's been thrown into the dumpster, as James Howard Kunstler says, in this city. As a side note, are you a fan of Kunstler?
Kind of, because when I was a grad student in the early 90s, I read his book, you know, The Geography of Nowhere, and you know, he hooked me into a lot of thoughts I have about city planning today. But he does it in a negative way, I think. You know, he trashes everything, and everything is ugly, and the architecture is ugly, and the people are stupid. And that's effective, but you know, I think that he did a great job of riling people up over the years into looking at the world differently. And you know, I think that a better way to do that is to be positive, but you know, he's effective in that way for sure.
Which of these approaches would best contribute to making Columbus's neighborhoods great? One, enhancing public safety. Two, improving walkability and transit. Three, stepping up efforts to reduce vacant or deteriorating housing. Four, increasing spaces for community gathering and recreation. Five, creating and installing neighborhood-based public art. And six, increasing civic involvement among residents in neighborhoods. Those are your six choices for neighborhoods. Great. 38% leading there. And improving neighborhoods is really strongly related to improving the walkability and transit. This next one is about sports and recreation. Which of these approaches would best contribute to enhancing sports and recreation in Columbus? Five themes. In creating inclusive and affordable community fitness activities. Two, investing in new and upgraded recreational facilities. Three, producing more professional sporting events. Four, improving and increasing multi-purpose trails that connect throughout the city. And five, increasing the number and frequency of sporting events such as tournaments and festivals. Those are your five choices for sports and recreation. Leading there, number four, is multi-purpose trails in the community, which has to do also with sort of getting around, followed by upgraded recreational facilities and inclusive and affordable fitness activities.
I noticed there was one of the questions was about greater police presence, but then one of the unique ones I saw in there was traffic calming, which is what I actually voted for, because I think if you slow down cars, it'll be a safer place. What are your guys' issue on crime and safety, if any? Have you ever been affected by crime in this city? Because to me, I think it's very polar. There's some people who have, and then most haven't. But everybody's aware. I don't know.
I mean, it's an issue. Every city has them. Small towns have them.
Yeah.
The country has them. This is not to do with exactly with your question, but my parents live in a tiny town in Tennessee, population 8,000 or something like that, and the FBI statistics would blow your mind. I mean, it looks terrible on paper, and
yeah.
You know, and I think most people who live in the city have had, you know, some issues. You know, I've had my car broken into a few times and so forth, but I think Columbus is a pretty safe city, actually.
Yeah, I think
I mean,
so.
It's you can make any statistic look however you want. And I know that there are problems and certainly need to be taken care of in a lot of pockets around town. But, you know, I think that we're pretty lucky in Columbus. That's my opinion, though.
Yeah, I personally feel pretty safe, but I'm pretty cocky and belligerent most of the time. So maybe it's a false sense of security.
No, I mean, I've only ever had problems with, like, car break-ins and things like that, and it's nothing major. I mean, it's something to be concerned about and aware about, but, I mean, things like that happen, you know, whether you live in the city or the suburbs of the country, kind of like Kyle said, and, I think really it's more a matter of perception, because I mean that's one of my complaints with some of the local news coverage is that you watch the nightly news and it's nothing but
murder.
Yeah,
murder, sports, and weather. What? And it's
WCRS news is different.
Yeah, and it gets on my nerves because when you know someone in the suburbs watches the news and it says you know oh someone got shot, you know. Downtown or on the Near East Side, that's a huge area, you know?
Yeah.
And they don't seem to, you know, really, the newscasters don't really seem to differentiate, you know, the difference between the Short North and downtown and German Village and some of the worst areas, you know. There are safe areas and there are some shadier areas, but I mean, in general, I think it's more of a perception issue than an actual issue.
It's totally perception based. I dated this girl for a while. Who was raised out in Pataskala, I guess, the exurbs. And she had just the worst image of what Indianola Avenue is. She just thought it was the worst place in the world. You know, I told her I was going to a party on Indianola, and she's like, oh, Indianola, it's nothing. It goes through Fraternity Row. Come on.
Well, I was in the Arena District, and it's sanitized. I mean, it's very new, and these a couple old, I won't say old, they were older, elderly women. Maybe they were in their upper 60s or early 70s, and they were walking around, and just eyes were huge, and they were looking for a coffee shop because somebody was having surgery at the eye clinic there in the Arena District, and so I said, well, come with me and I'll take you to the nearest coffee. I think it's Starbucks up there. Yeah. And they come into me. We haven't been down here in 20 years. I can't believe it. You know, they were so scared to come down to the city. And because it just, you know, because what Walker said, the news is, you know, it's what is it, murder and weather. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's a problem that we have to get over in this country, not just in Columbus, is that it's, you know, it's cities are scary and suburbs are not, and the country is perfectly.
The normalization of civic places, the normalization of the urban space.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is Mayor Mike Coleman welcoming you to WCRS 102.1, 98.3 LPFM, Columbus's community radio.
Which of these approaches is most important for encouraging alternative modes of transportation? Six choices. One, improving pedestrian and bicycle infrastructure. Two, investing in cleaner, safer, and more affordable public transit. Three, creating incentives and public information campaigns to increase the use of transit. Four, improving the bus system. Five, investigating options for rail-based transit. And six, creating initiatives to promote carpooling. Those are your six themes in transportation.
It's very bold music.
All right. And number five. It's got to be one of the highest choices, number five, at 45%, investigating options for rail-based transit for the city of Columbus.
The third aspect of the Citizen Summit and the polling was how to approach the desires of the citizens, how to implement them. And from what my readings is that the mayor is going to go for this $1 billion bond package on the November ballot. As far as I know, Columbus is one of the top-rated AAA bond cities, largest, best-rated city in the United States. I don't really understand municipal bonds, do you? Can you tell our listeners
in a little bit? In a very rudimentary way, I suppose.
Better than what I got.
Okay. Let's see, how do I put it? The city can sell off, sell bonds to investors who invest in bonds, in municipal bonds, and then use that money to pay for capital improvements. So the Citizen Summit will guide, this is how I see it, the Citizen Summit will guide the city and all the committees in helping choose which of these projects should be funded so that when we reach our bicentennial year of 2012, that we'll have them in place, or hopefully have some of them in place, or, well on their way. So the residents of Columbus have to allow that to take place, have to give the city permission to sell bonds so that the money can be transferred or can be spent on these capital improvement projects. Does that make – hope that makes sense.
It does.
I hope that's correct.
It does make sense. Is the – you might not know this or not. Is the mayor pushing for just one bond that covers everything, or is it multiple things you can vote on? Like you can maybe say no to issue one but yes to issue two.
I think the way it works, and the key word here is think, the way that a certain amount of money is allocated to be spent and then for people to invest in or in the bonds. And, it could be $50 million or $100 million or whatever it is. And that takes care of a multitude of different projects. It's not necessarily one project. And I'm not speaking for the city of Columbus, but they've done this over the years. The last one was a few years ago, 2003, I think. I don't remember when the last one was, but it was voted 60 or 70% of the population voted for it, and the taxes weren't raised, and we still maintain this AAA bond rating that we enjoy here. So that's how I think things are going around and working.
Yeah. Do you know of as a city planner and advocate and say a consultant maybe?
Yeah.
To municipalities and developers, do you know of any other cities in recent times that have had similar push? Maybe not necessarily for a bicentennial, but maybe for something greater. When cities get the Olympics, does this these sort of things happen?
Oh yeah, I was in Salt Lake City a few times over the years, and it's amazing what the Olympics can do. Because Salt Lake City only has 180,000 people, and they have a pretty brilliant light rail system, and they have a downtown that's just rocking with people and stores. So, yeah, I think that certainly can help a lot and get money raised and things built for sure. But I know that at my personal experience, I used to work for the city of Chattanooga, Tennessee, and if you've never been there, their downtown is brilliant, and they have
They have an aquarium.
They have an aquarium, but they have the longest pedestrian bridge in the world that they saved from an old Model T era bridge, and the whole community paid for it. And you know, they have a riverfront that has an amphitheater underneath an overpass, and it has perfect acoustics. And they have a come back to the river, Tennessee River Park that it gleams with parks and art. And that's been there for a long time, and they started in the early 1980s, and they finished it about 15 years later. So, and they also had a process similar to what Columbus is doing. In fact, I think that the same consultant worked for them.
Yeah. When did they do that?
I don't know the exact date, but it was the early 80s.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Something I've said a couple times on Columbus Underground that streetcar lines in the past were built by private developers to sell land that are now what you call the streetcar suburbs or like inner city places. Why is there no – is it just because it's too expensive? Why is there no private push for this if anywhere or maybe a public-private partnership? Or is there somewhere?
I think there's going to be a little bit of partnership involved. I mean, they're looking to the larger companies that can stand to benefit from having the line in and trying to distribute some of the cost to them, so it's not completely up to ridership to fund the thing. I think you won't see that kind of model being used anymore because the majority of the tracts of land downtown are completely broken up. You're talking about back when people had acres and acres and acres of land, and they could build this transit system through the middle of it because ultimately it was self-serving. You know, they're selling all these houses and they're providing something for their neighborhood that they owned. And you don't see that downtown anymore. You see all these tiny little broken parcels. So it's got to be something, at least initiated by the government and then funded by everyone who's going to benefit just because we're such a fractured grid these days. I mean, you see similar things when you go out to giant suburban developments, not in the way of streetcar transit, but you see the kind of amenities that they want to build into their community and have a little strip mall center, have little parks, and it's for that neighborhood only because it's their giant track. You just don't see that in inner city areas.
Any comments, Kyle?
I think Walker hit it on the nose. I think today a developer is, if he or she develops in the country somewhere, they're probably going to build a road. That's, you know, people don't ride streetcars. They don't know streetcars. They weren't born when streetcars were buzzing around Columbus. So it's the same thing today, except they build private roads instead of the private streetcar lines today. So I think that, you know, if we wrap ourselves around the idea that people want to ride, it's all about what people want to do. I know that, if I might mention, you like to bicycle you like to, you know, encourage people to do that, but people don't like to ride bike. They wouldn't be caught dead on a bike. So it's the same thing.
It's a dirty
with that,
habit,
you know?
Actually. Filthy.
It's just a matter of what people want, how people want to behave, and if they wanted streetcars, developers would be happy to build them for them.
Good. Some of the did you think that the questions you said how the mayor was nodding and seemed to be agreeing with it? Do you think some of the questions were, I don't want to say rigged, but written in a way that sort of pushed towards maybe what the city hall wants to do anyway? Or do you think it's just such a huge, broad issues that they kind of had to narrow them down in sort of a generic sense?
Well, you know, I thought that in some ways the opposite, because how would transportation or rail transportation be pulled out of something like what does the city need to make it a better city in the future, or whatever the question was? It seemed like that was a it came out of nowhere, but I think a lot of people are for that capital improvement. But then there was one question I remember that was, it seemed funny because people laughed in the audience. It was that what does downtown need, and it needs
the
this,
all above one.
Yeah, all of the above, and that was kind of, it seemed like it was a no brainer, and people understood that. But I don't know how else you do it, but make a general question.
Yeah,
and, you know,
when you have thousands and thousands of responses over a year of polling and having to get it down into a few hours.
I think they did a pretty good job, and I know that they didn't just throw these questions up and without thought. It probably took a lot of hours and racking a brain and late nights to figure out which questions they're going to throw out there to 2,000 people.
What did you think of the music during the questioning? for you those listening, we're going to place the outro of the show will be some of the music.
It was very Jeopardy-esque. That's what they were going for.
Well, I thought it was kind of cool because it wasn't the Jeopardy theme song, mm-hmm. but we had some soul music from the 1960s, and we had some, I don't know, some elevator music, and it made people laugh. I think that it was fun. Yeah. And they did a good job with it.
Yeah, I need to hire that DJ for a party. And the one where Ray will run out big, the background music was this sort of like Western frontiers, like something you'd hear, you know, guys working on the railroad in Nevada or something. It was. Do you think that was intentional?
I didn't even pick it up.
Yeah. So we're here with Kyle Izzell talking about the Citizen Summit, the 2012 Bicentennial Citizen Summit here on WCRS 102.1 98.3. Kyle, what did you think of the crowd there? They kept saying this is really diverse, really hearkening on that. What did you think?
I thought it was exactly diverse. I thought, wow, I can't believe that all of these different types of people are together like this. And when I moved to Columbus in 1998, when I was in my 20s.
Where'd you come from?
I came from Tennessee. I'm originally from near Nashville, Tennessee. Can't you hear my southern twang a little bit?
It's wonderful.
Anyway, when I moved here, people complained about Wonder Bread, you know, white bread, cracker, you know, real plain Jane kind of homogeneous Columbus. And it just really is very diverse, and I think that's something that most people around the country have no idea about. And all you had to do is look around the room, and you could see it. And I thought that was one of the most revealing things to me about the night. And they kept going over and over, or they talked about it a lot. And I agree, they should have.
Yeah. What's your definition? Your personal definition of diversity?
Personal definition of diversity. Looking around a room and I don't see people just like me.
Yeah.
And that can mean anything, but we have it here.
Yeah. I mean, diversity usually gets something like sort of automatically placed on like race or ethnicity, but I think it's I think that's a real simple definition and doesn't really. I think if diversity is like the multitude of almost activities and interests, it's like heterogeneous occupations, and not in like a job sense, but in just what you're applying yourself to and what you've been applied to and what you're into. And that's, I think, what diversity comes down to. But I did notice there's one element of Columbus that wasn't there, the hipster element. Where were they?
Please explain. What do you mean? How do you describe or define a hipster?
I really don't have a definition. It was just a personal joke. Oh, okay. I said to my buddy Miles, who was also attending there, I said, where's the hipsters at? And he said, I don't know.
At this point, I'd like to invite to the stage Bishop Timothy Clark.
Senator Edward Moore Kennedy, in eulogizing his brother, quoted these words: some people see things as they are and only ask why. I dream things that never were and say why not. Tonight, I challenge us to dream things that never were and say of this city and say of ourselves, why not? Why not a vibrant Columbus? Why not a bold initiative? Why not health care? Why not arts? Why not health care? Why not all of the things that we have talked about tonight? Tonight I challenge us, imagine, in the words of John Lennon, imagine a city that is indeed the greatest city to live, to work, to play, to raise a family. Dream things that never were and say, why not? Jamie.
But we ask you, what might be holding us back from being a leading place to live and work? And these are the themes: transportation choices, public education needs, crime and poverty, apathy, job needs, and our own self-image. So at 24% has to do with the mobility question, followed by our self-image and our public education needs. Good things for the commission to know.
So Walker Evans, the founder, top poster, and I'd say administrator of ColumbusUnderground.com. What is your vision for Columbus the next 10 years?
That's a good question. I think, judging from like what's been going on in the past 10 years and kind of where we're at and with the Citizen Summit and the city really reaching out and paying attention to different groups than it may have used to, especially young people, I think we're going to see a lot of big, you know, kind of life-changing improvements, you know, in the realm of transportation and the realm of recycling and the realm of, you know, improved park systems and things like that. So I think these are things that people have always valued, or at least, you know, it's not uncommon for people to have these values, but they're really getting pushed to the forefront. And I think it's going to make Columbus stand out. We're going to start seeing more, you know, kind of national coverage. Every once in a while, there'll be like a Forbes list, you know, and Columbus will kind of rank, you know.
Well, we're list worthy.
Yeah, right. And I think we're going to become more list worthy, and I think there's going to be a bit more of a buzz. I'd like to see Columbus become, I'm not going to say, you know, we're going to be the next New York City or the next Chicago, but I'd like to see Columbus be the leader of kind of the second tier cities and kind of, you know, take a better stance against like some of our competitors that young people are moving to, like Austin and Portland and Charlotte and Denver. And, you know, I think the buzz is growing. It's just going to take a couple more real initiatives to kind of solidify our place.
And Kyle?
I think that as a resident of 10 years here, that we're on the cusp. And either – let me back up. I have been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for all these years for something really fantastic to happen. And I think a lot of people have too. And I think it's a fantastic city, and it's very livable and extremely comfortable. And
affordable.
It's affordable, and once you get entrenched here, it's hard to see yourself anywhere else. But there are a lot of people out there who have said, all right, I'm tired of waiting on Columbus taking the next step. And, you know, they moved to all the places that Walker rattled off, and there are a lot more like that too. And I think that we're either going to go, you know, be fantastically forging paths that other cities that they'll clamor to copy, and we'll be on those lists and so forth, and the quality of life will get much, much better. And like Walker said, the life-changing improvements will be very clear. On the other hand, we could, you know, it could go the other way too, the other way doesn't mean we're going to fall down into the pits of hell, but it means that, you know, we're just going to continue to wait and wait on something that so many thousands of people have been hoping for here, and that's why it's, you know, these next few years are going to be very, very interesting and extremely exciting to see if these things happen, because I think this is the time that Columbus makes or breaks itself.
Let's get busy. Well, I think it's going to wrap it up with our guest here, Mr. Walker Evans. Can you say how people can get a hold of you and your site, please?
Sure. It's columbusunderground.com. If anyone wants to email me, my address is walkerevans@columbusunderground.com. You know, feel free to shoot me an email. We'll chat. And yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Happy birthday.
Thanks.
And Kyle? Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is fun. www.geturban.com, or you can email me at kylezell@geturban.com. And thank you for having me very much, Zach.
Thank you for coming in. And also thank you to Desi, the baby, correct? Desi?
Yeah.
Desmond?
Desmond, yeah.
Desmond, thank you very much as well. And thank you out there. You've been listening to WCRS 102.1 98.3. Columbus.
Now say one more thing. Say, neighbor, it's my city too.
We're just listening to the Citizen Summit, and we'd like to thank again our guests Walker Evans and Kyle Wiesel for their commentary and contributions here on WCRS and the 2012 Bicentennial Citizen Summit review and commentary. This was hosted by myself, Zach Hinkle, produced, put together by myself as well, but also with the help of Eugene Beer and Denise Naim, two volunteers here at WCRS. You too can volunteer at the radio station. We need tech experts to do podcasting, webcasting, work on our website, streaming, radio technology, production experts to make this sound better than it does, to operate the machinery, engineers. We need people who can organize, fundraising, marketing, come in here and build playlists, be DJ, come in, make their own programs. We are open and willing, non-formatted. This is volunteer-run. Listener-supported, community radio, non-commercial, for Columbus, 102.1, 98.3 WCRS.